Leonard Seed Service supports agricultural programming on WILL as an additional service to its customers. Leonard Seed Service is an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products to farmers throughout East Central Illinois via the Asgrow on-demand bulk soybean handling system. Leonard Seed Service, 217-497-2270.
From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 10th day of September 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll take a look forward to tomorrow's WASDE and crop production report. Those are due out at 11 a.m. Central Time. We'll have information up on our website at willag.org at 11 a.m. and 10 seconds if all things are going well. Today, we'll discuss the cash grain market, too. That'll be with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. Look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner and talk about silage and the proper way to do a chop and the decision-making process that goes into that with Phil Cardoso. He's an animal scientist right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago. For this Wednesday afternoon, $3.38¾ was the final trade in the September contract. It was up 2.5 cents on the afternoon in the corn pit. December at $3.45¾, up 1½, and March at $3.58½, a penny and a quarter higher for the day. May futures at $3.66¾, up 1¼. July, up a penny and a quarter at $3.74. And next year's December corn at $3.90½, up a penny on the day. Soy complex bean futures $10.70. The settlement price down 5.5, that is, in the September. November at $9.93¾, up 1, and January at $10.25, up a penny for the day. And the March futures at $10.05¾, up 0.75. May at $10.12½, up 1¼, and July at $10.18½, up a penny. Next year's November at $10.05¾ lower. Soybean meal futures finished the nearby at $4.42.80, down $10.90, and the bean oil on the day in the October up 7 cents at $31.63. Live cattle futures at $159.62½ in the October were a nickel lower as they finished off the afternoon. Cattle futures in the October $226.80, down 95 cents for the afternoon, and lean hogs at $107.10 in the October, $1.32½ higher. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Find us online at willag.org. Here's what the outside markets are trading like at this hour. Crude oil futures for the day at $91.60 a barrel, down $1.15. Diesel fuel or heating oil, that's at $2.75. It's a three and seven tenths of a cent lower on the afternoon. Gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB at $2.52¼, a penny and 0.9 of a cent lower. Natural gas down 2 6/10 of a cent to $3.95 and 8 tenths of a cent. Ethanol futures on the day finished up at $1.88½. That's 4 9/10 of a cent lower. Taking a look at the outside markets with the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 17,046, up just about 12 points. The New York Gold at $1,247.25 higher. And the dollar index trading 0.006 higher at 84.29 on the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Occasional showers, some thunderstorms. Some of the storms could produce heavy rainfall, high about 79 degrees, a breezy southwest wind at 18 to 20, gusting to 29, a chance of rainfall in the area set at 90%. Tonight, showers and thunderstorms will continue before midnight, then a slight chance of showers between midnight and 1 a.m., mostly cloudy and low of 54 degrees, a west wind at 11 miles an hour. Chance of rainfall this evening set at 60%. Thursday in the area, mostly sunny and 66 degrees on a north wind at 9 to 11 miles an hour. Let me repeat the high for tomorrow. It is just 66 degrees and then a 48 degree low tomorrow night at 48. Northeast winds at 8 miles an hour. And Friday, partly sunny skies and 65, and northeast wind at 8 to 10. Friday night, down to 45, and it will be cloudy. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour. We'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at AgriGold.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. How are you today?
Well, good afternoon, Todd. I am very, very good. I'm looking for sunshine.
And we are all indeed looking for sunshine at this point. You know, what's the top of your mind beyond the USDA's reports tomorrow? I know those are the things that we'll want to talk about in a moment. Anything else that you've been worried about, been thinking about, have looked into at this time?
Well, there's quite a few things, actually, when you come right down to it. Probably one of my biggest concerns are beans. At this juncture, you know, when you know that next week Monday is the 15th of September, and that's when Brazil starts to plant, okay? They've already got the 2 inches of rain that they needed, that the oils usually wait for. And this year it appears that instead of just a small portion of the crop being shorter maturity beans, they're going to really push forward on a larger portion because they want to try and stay away from spending all the money on the fungicides. And so that means that a lot of those beans will be coming out before New Year's. So, you know, that really doesn't bode well for us. We normally look for that point in time when South America is kind of not necessarily out of beans, but, you know, toward that end and they're busy with other things, that's when we pick up. And so I think that could bring some real pressure to this marketplace. And then you look at Argentina. You know, Argentina farmers are sitting on about 300 to 400 million bushels of beans from last year. If their economy begins to get better after the first year, all of that could come in against us at the very same time. And so, you know, when CONAB came out with 86.1 million metric tons of beans yesterday, we're hearing like 4 to 5% more acres. I talked with Dr. Michael Cornier, and he told me he actually thinks it's more like 95 million metric tons is where the potential is. And, you know, there's really not any major threatening weather in terms of El Nino down there. So that's something that's really bothered me a lot. And today I went and I looked at some of the retracements. I looked at the highs in December corn from August till yesterday would project 328, you know, which we're not that far away from that. But if you look at May, that was the major high that we'd had there down to yesterday. It takes us down to 278. And on beans, same period except July to yesterday was 945 and May to yesterday was 893. None of that sounds, that doesn't sound good. At the same time, and you know this because you've been doing meetings with me and you've been talking to me for weeks, I keep talking about the dollar. Well, the dollar hit a six-year high against the Japanese yen this week. And as simplistic as I can put it, okay, that's up 5.6%. For the dollar has rallied 5.6% so far since July the 10th. On July the 10th, the Japanese could buy corn before shipping a basis for a nickel over the market. Today, it's 24 cents over the market before basis and shipping. So, you know, even though we've reduced the price of corn and the income to our farmers, it makes it that much tougher for them. So, you know, those are things that are really bugging me, let's put it that way.
Now, a couple of other things to deal with corn. I made note on my Twitter account, and I think you probably made note yesterday and maybe today with some of your Western clients, that they are harvesting, and I don't know that anybody expected them to be, but it appears they have truck lines already.
Oh, they do. It's pretty amazing when you come right down to it because what traditionally, you know, we get clients all over the U.S., okay? And so I've been talking with guys about when do you think you're going to black layer, blah, blah, blah. And last week in Nebraska, they were saying, oh, not till the end of September probably. Then they went out and checked and said, holy cow, we're almost there. And then on Monday of this week, I got a report from out there saying that an ethanol plant south of Lincoln took in 230 semi-loads of corn on a program that they had that if you were 25% moisture or below, you didn't get any shrink charged against you, you know. Well, Tuesday they dropped it to 22% because 50% of the loads were below 22% already. So on average, what it appears is that corn is maturing out about 2 weeks faster than you might think according to when it was planted. And from my old agronomy days, I think, you know, it's probably related to, a continued accumulation of growing degrees at a faster pace because you know, when we get above 86 degrees, it shuts the plant down. Then it takes a period of time for the plant to start back up. Well, a lot of days we had back-to-back days where we were never above 86. And so we just kept on accumulating. And that's, you know, that to me seems to be one of the things. One of my South Dakota guys had told me earlier in the week that he planted the exact same variety of sweet corn, the exact same maturity, actually even on the same field as last year, 8 days later this year, and it matured 6 days earlier than last year. So I talked to a bunch of my North Dakota guys today. I said, so where are you? How far behind are you? I got the same answer. We're caught up. Now, that's hard to believe, you know, but the other side of the coin, Todd, is we're hearing interesting things. You know, you hear a lot of talk about 80,000 kernel bushels this year rather than 90,000, which is our standard. And I actually had someone call in this morning rather panicked, and he just said, you know, we've been out there and we're running 70,000 bushel kernels, or 70,000 kernels to a bushel on land where we put nitrogen on. You know, not last fall. Last fall's isn't as high, but the stuff that they did in the spring, he said, he was just absolutely flabbergasted. So as we move forward into harvest, it's going to be interesting. And when you look at the Delta, wow. I got guys in the Delta that are running 75 to 100 bushel beans. Normally 60, 65 is probably the neighborhood, 70 maybe. And corn 230 to 250. And you're looking a lot of times down there, maybe 180 to 200 at a very good number. So it seems as if it's spread all over the, you know, all over the map here, that because of these cooler, you know, non-threatening, consistent temperatures, corn has really, really responded to that.
We'll find out more tomorrow when USDA releases its numbers, won't we? That happens at 11 o'clock Central Time. How big will that thing be? What's the average trade guess is, what, 170.6 or something like that?
170.7, I think, is the average, and 46.3 on beans.
Right.
To be honest with you, Todd, now you're probably going to be amazed when you hear this come out of my mouth, but I think they actually might be a little high on their guesses in terms of the size of the crop. I think, and maybe not. I don't know. If we're at 170.7 on USDA or NATS actually makes any adjustments to, you know, for the lack of planted, for prevented plant, then these numbers might be too high. If not, I think, you know, they're probably right in the ballpark. We're hearing numbers of 14.6, 14.5, things like that for, you know, for January's report. Carry out at 2 billion bushels on corn and 453 million on beans might be in question. I don't know exactly, but, you know, everything comes down to whether they decide on this September report, will we make the adjustments when it comes to the ethanol part of it, and may we see a rub here in terms of what we're actually producing on ethanol and how many bushels it takes versus what USDA uses for their formula. And, you know, that'll be the question. If it's 2 billion, well, we'll take our next step lower, I would think. Because
hey,
I really don't think the trade has got that in there yet.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. And we'll talk to you on Commodity Week this week. I'm looking forward to that one.
You betcha. Talk with you then. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Jackie Bakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon and will be one of our panelists for Commodity Week. That one airs live at 4:30, or rather at 2:30 on Friday afternoon, immediately following the Closing Market Report on our home radio station. That's WILL AM 580. In the morning on Saturdays on many of our radio stations and always up at willag.org on Friday afternoon. Commodity Week, our weekly look at what's happened in the world of agriculture. Tonight I will be in Tutopolis at the Knights of Columbus at 6 o'clock. I kind of hope that I get a chance to see many of you there. And along with us, Dale Durkles and Chip Nellinger will be there to take up the marketplace. Gary Schnicki to talk about the ARC and PLC decision, which reminds me, one of the numbers we always talk about on crop production and WASDE days, or World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates, which are due tomorrow, is a number that most people don't pay a lot of attention to. That's the average season's average cash price. It is projected, but it also all has some actual numbers in it. Early in the season, it's not many actual numbers because there haven't been many new crop sales made or current crop sales made, but it will make a difference because this is the way the ARC and the PLC programs will be figured. So tomorrow, when I give you that season's average cash price, you're going to want to pay attention. inflation, especially if it happens to be below $3.70 a bushel. We'll talk more about that later. Now, here's Dave Dickey with today's Ag News.
Pork producers in Canada and other leading countries are threatening to pull their support for the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal unless tariffs go to zero on virtually all agriculture products. In an open letter, the pork producers said Japan's continued refusal to open vast sectors of its protected farm market, including pork and beef, is threatening to derail the talks. The letter, though, does not specifically mention Canada's protected dairy and poultry sectors, which Ottawa has so far staunchly defended in the TPP negotiations. TPP negotiators are meeting this week as they aim to reach a final deal by the end of the year. But momentum has stalled because of the slow progress of parallel negotiations between the U.S. and Japan, the newest TPP member. USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says that he might take action to offer his own changes to the beef checkoff, since the beef industry has failed to reach any consensus on management changes to the program. The issues are both the amount of money to be raised and the decision-making process about how it is spent and who spends it. The National Cattlemen's Beef Association has proposed raising the checkoff to $2, but other farm and cattle groups say they will not agree to that unless the process for managing the checkoff is made more transparent and other groups can get part of the checkoff budget. They also maintain that the checkoff subsidizes NCBA, which promotes policies which they disagree. The lack of consensus, Vilsack says, leaves the possibilities of continuing what we are doing, which is satisfactory to no one. Russia's Federal Customs Service says that imports of vegetables, meat, and dairy products to Russia plummeted in August after Moscow decided to ban food purchases from countries that imposed sanctions against Russia. In August, imports of vegetables and fruit dropped by 73.2% and 32.4% on the month, respectively. Dairy imports fell by 56.1%. Grain imports shrank by 37.9%. Fish purchases abroad slid 27.3%. And meat imports were down 17.4% compared to July. Imports of meat, poultry, milk, fish, vegetables, and fruits from European Union, U.S., Australia, and Norway were banned in early August after Moscow moved to retaliate against Western sanctions. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Dave will have your first look at the WASD figures on our air tomorrow at 12:20. He'll talk with Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. You can get an immediate look at 11 o'clock. That's when those numbers are due out on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Or if you happen to be a Twitter user, just follow me. I'm at Commodity Week. And I'll have those numbers up within just a few seconds right there on your Twitter account. At Commodity Week is my handle. Now, up next, you know, corn silage can make up to as much as 30 to 40% of a dairy cow's diet, so it's really important to get it right. And that starts in the field. Farmers should harvest corn silage when it contains about 30 to 34% dry matter. This means the plant and grain are made up of about 70% water. There's a quick and easy method to determine this. Just break apart an ear of corn and look for the milk line, says University of Illinois animal scientist Phil Cardozo.
So by looking the grain, so you go out of the field, you get a cob, break it out, look at the cob, and you're going to see that milk line. If it is at three quarters, then you say, okay, it's ready.
This is a quick and easy way to decide when to chop silage and can allow a farmer to decide which parts of a field to chop and or to leave for later. There's a more accurate way to do this with a microwave and a scale. Either way, the chop should be done at about 70%. It's also really important to set the chopper correctly, particularly the rollers.
So those rollers, the distance between the two rollers, it's going to be around 0.1 inches or 3 millimeters. So that is pretty much processing all the corn grain that is coming through those rollers. So that's why we say it's processing. So what do we want to do? We want to damage the corn grain. Because remember that you have the corn grain, and around it, there is the pericarp that is protecting the starch. If we don't damage the pericarp and expose the starch, whenever the cows are eating this inside the rumen, then the bugs or the bacteria will not have access to ferment that and give the volatile fatty acids to the cow, and that's what is nourishing the cow.
Making sure the grain is damaged or processed is a vital step in making good silage. We'll call setting the rollers to 0.1 inches, or about 3 millimeters, step one.
Secondly, what we need to do is, what is the size of the particle and that you're going to have on that material, okay? If we have it too long, whenever it goes to the silo, it's harder to compact. So imagine that you have a lot of hay or straw and you're trying to make something really compact. You're going to have a lot of air inside, so it really doesn't compact, and that bothers fermentation. If you cut it too short, the particle size, that's going to be great for the silo and for fermentation. You're going to be able to compact that. However, cows are not going to be able to have that effective fiber that stimulates the rumen. So everything that is less than 3/4 of an inch doesn't stimulate the rumen of the cow. Like, for example, grain, corn grain or soybean meal, when we give to the cow, that doesn't make the rumen move. That's why cows, we need to give hay, we need to give haylage, corn silage. So we think that 3/4 of an inch, that's where you have your best size that is going to still stimulate some rumination, and you're going to be able to compact that.
However, this 3/4 inch length means the plant must be harvested at the right moment, and we've returned to the 70% moisture. It's not easy to get it all right. Chop at about 70% using very sharp knives to get the cut to 3/4 of an inch and set the rollers to about 0.1 inches, so 90% of the kernels are damaged. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Let's check in and see if the folks at the Anderson's Climbers Facility are available this afternoon. They've been really busy. Who do I have to talk with this afternoon?
You got Stephen, Todd.
Hi, Stephen. Good news. You've been busy. I've got 1 minute, so all I really need to know is why you're busy and what your bids are, which is probably why you're busy.
Really, right now, it's just on the front end of early bean premiums being put out there from the processor perspective. Extremely hungry in that regard. A lot of opportunity there for guys to sweep up, $2 to $3 premiums over the X here by first half set. But unfortunately, you look outside and we've been getting pounded with precipitation to where everything's kind of at a standstill. So everybody now interested in knowing if we're seeing any extension to the bid. But that seems to be the front demand right now before we even really start talking about when corn goes to harvest.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's hot dog day. The first recorded hot dog sausage as we know it today was eaten by the Greeks from at least 850 BC. But the idea of putting a hot dog on bread dates to 1880. By the way, baseball and hot dogs go back to at least 1893, when you could go to Sportsman's Park and catch a St. Louis Browns game and grab the newfangled hot dog. On this day in agricultural history in 1898, Waldo Seaman was born. An American chemical engineer, his technical leadership led to the discovery of three major new polymer families: thermoplastic polyurethane, synthetic natural rubber, and oil-resistant synthetic rubbers. In 1859, Thomas Nuttall died, an English naturalist and botanist. He collected and studied plants around the Chesapeake Bay area in the U.S. In 1913, the official route of the Lincoln Highway was announced. It was the first coast-to-coast highway running from New York to San Francisco. And in 2001, the first case of mad cow disease in Asian animals was reported in a dairy cow in Japan. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Just a quick reminder that you can catch up with me tonight in Tutopolis at the Knights of Columbus. There is a meal at 6 o'clock. If you haven't signed up, please show up about 6:30 and have eaten already. It's open. We're going to talk about ARC and PLC. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. Drew Lerner is in, I believe, Fargo, North Dakota. Is that the Big Iron event that you're attending today, Drew?
That is correct. It's quite a crowd, and it's a big show up here, but it's cold, man. It's cold. The temperature is probably barely 50 degrees, and the wind's blowing at 25 miles an hour, so things are better down your way, I think.
Well, we always hear that about the Dakotas. The log chain stands straight out, and I guess you're in the midst of that. It is cold, but is it cold enough on the bottom side at night to do any damage to the crops in the Dakotas?
We are very concerned about that. One thing that is in the favor of this region is the fact that this high-pressure center is going to move from Alberta, Canada, to Nebraska, and that will miss most of the eastern part of the Dakotas, and the same thing for Minnesota and Iowa. Eventually, the high will come into the western Corn Belt, but as it does, it'll be coming in much, much weaker. So in answer to your question, I think there will be crop damage in western and northern parts of North Dakota, Montana, and areas northward up through much of the Canadian prairies. But for the eastern Dakotas, Minnesota, Nebraska, western Iowa, I think we'll come close to freezing, but we'll probably just barely miss out on some significant damage. Certainly, there's no risk of 28 degrees or colder. If it gets down close to freezing, we might get to 30 or 32 degrees in some of those northwestern parts of the Corn Belt, but I do not expect to see a killing freeze necessarily, but we could do some injuries still to the crop.
Tell me about the rainfall we have had for the Corn Belt and what you expect.
Boy, I'll tell you what, Missouri, I don't know what they did wrong, but they got beat up pretty good last night with Browning, Missouri, in the north central part of the state, picking up 10.2 inches of rain just overnight. And Kirksville, Missouri had 9.27 inches. A broad region of 2 to 4 inch rains occurred from eastern Nebraska through northern parts of Missouri and southern Iowa over to Illinois, the north part of Illinois, west central areas as well. And this is on top of ground that was already fairly wet. So we've got some real issues with excessive moisture right now. I would certainly look towards the next week, the week and a half, where we'll see less frequent rain, less significant rain, but it won't be necessarily absolutely dry. We will see much improved conditions.
Have you thought much about other parts of the world, whether that would be China and the corn crop they are ready to harvest there soon, and or South America and the beginnings of their planting season?
Well, certainly China, they are waiting for their dry season to kick in. They've got a fairly significant dry season that begins in late September and goes on into October. And they plant most of their winter wheat during that window, and the summer crop harvest is usually most aggressive during that period. But for this particular week coming up, there won't be any sign of any kind of significant dry down in some of East Central China's crop region. A lot of rain coming up for them as well. But I think in another week to 10 days, the conditions will be a lot better. And in Argentina, we've had some dryness, that was relieved this past weekend in the western wheat areas, also in some of their corn and sunseed producing areas. So the stage is set for a little bit better planting conditions a little later this month. Southern Brazil, probably a little too wet, Rio Grande do Sul in particular. But the rest of Brazil is waiting on seasonal rains, and those are not going to come for another week to 10 days at the earliest. And then we'll see some scattered showers at that point. So maybe we'll start setting the stage for a planting season that is expected to go fairly well.
That's Drew Lerner, of course, of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I'm Todd Gleason.